Well, good morning. Today, about 3:30 in the morning, I took everything I was going to say and threw it out the door. So if I go on ramble, I apologize now. I agree with Kellen and her sisters that we live in a blessed country. We really do. We do not get persecuted, but I wonder sometimes if it would be better if we did. My life is, I'm very blessed. I have a wonderful wife. I have three healthy boys and a job I love. I do. How I ended up with my wife, again, I, according to how Ted likes to always razz me, he was my pastor as a young, as a teen, and but after he met Sarah, he's like, "How did you ever get her to marry you?" And I always said, I have no idea." You know, the way he encourages. So, but no, we do live in a blessed world, and I had a lady today or this week who I went and delivered a package to, and it was her chemotherapy, and she's living longer than doctors said that she should have, but as she does, she also has a wonderful attitude. And so as at the end of it, she asked me, she says, "Hey, would you want me to give you, you know, can I get you a Hershey kiss?" I go, "Okay, sure." So she went, and I thought it was right by her door, but it wasn't. She had to walk away. I said, "No, don't worry about it." She came back, gave it to me, and she goes, "Now here," and says, "Now, you know, don't tell anybody I gave you a kiss." I said, "But ma'am, if I don't, you know, this is, it's a secret. And I really need to tell my wife that, you know, I did." So I did tell Sarah, but what I guess I want to talk about is secrecy sometimes. Secrecy is a problem. This world and this society really despises us as Christians, and they're doing everything they can to weaken us and to keep us from honoring God and honoring Christ. About 3 years ago, I bought into some of this secrecy, and I was not honoring God and was not honoring my wife. That came at a when that was found out, when it was exposed. It led to a call to Wendell, who gave me a proverbial kick in the hind end, but with much regret, with much apologies, forgiveness, and love, God can heal, and He has. We've celebrated 25 years in April. And for a while, I didn't know if we were going to make that. But God is a God of second chances and healing. Never forget that. Never get to where you're complacent, to where you're not guarding yourself, guarding your heart, and guarding your mind. For a long time there, I did not have problems like that. And I think I got a little too arrogant sometimes and just started thinking, "Oh, it'll never happen." But it will. Satan doesn't need to hit you with everything all at once. He can hit you just a little at a time, just a little compromise here and there, and eventually it leads to a big compromise. Again, like I said, we live in a blessed world. I have a very blessed life, a blessed wife and family. I'm very honored to be here, very honored to be here with the church family I am with. I'm honored to have the elders we have who thought of these things and who have put who's not afraid of telling you the hard things and giving you the way to a biblical way out, and not just but a biblical solution. So again, I thank you, Wendell. I thank you, Josh, and the rest of the elders here. That is really all I have to say. I hope you guys have a blessed day.
Hello. We all have a story to tell, a journey that we have taken. Here follows an abbreviated version of mine. I don't remember much of my childhood. However, I do distinctly remember that on multiple occasions I was forced to face the hardcore realization that my brain did not function like those of most of my peers. I struggled with high anxiety as a child. That was exacerbated due to my daily frustration with not understanding proper or appropriate social interaction with others. I was also very sensitive to stimuli and emotions, including the emotions of those around me. Along with this, there were also mental health issues, but I didn't know it yet. I was essentially like a sponge everywhere I went, and it felt truly awful. I learned very early on how to mask my struggles and keep them tucked away, only to be revealed when I was alone. It was in those moments alone that I would replay every interaction that I failed to execute appropriately. You got this wrong. You got that wrong. You're awkward and weird, and you're failing to fit in as a normal person, and it's showing, like the panic. Had I been born much later in time, these issues might have been an indication of some spectral challenges or mental illness, but I was born in 1981, and there just wasn't the awareness like there is now. As you can imagine, all of these struggles took a heavy toll on me. By the time I was 16 years old, I had started seeing a psychiatrist who diagnosed me with bipolar disorder. I started taking medication and I began counseling. I was in a little better place mentally when I graduated high school in 1999. That fall, Chris and I started dating and we got married in March of 2000. Life was going relatively well for us until we tried to start a family. My first pregnancy ended in early miscarriage in November of 2001. I gave birth to Simon, our only child, in February 2003. I had two more miscarriages after he was born, one in August of 2004 and one in April of 2005. I was 18 weeks along with my final miscarriage. We lost a little boy, and his name was Samuel Christopher Jones. I love saying his name. The changing hormones of four pregnancies within 4 years' time, along with the grief, created a cesspool of poor mental health for me. I allowed my grief to break my will to the point where I turned to food for comfort. The use or absence of food was not a new coping method for me. I had struggled with anorexia and bulimia throughout all my teen years. So turning to food addiction was a somewhat familiar way for me to fill the emptiness I felt so deeply. Unfortunately, this is how addiction works for many addicts. Dull or stuff the emotions so that you feel nothing. And that's what food did for me for many years. Like most addicts, I reached a point where I wanted my life to change, but I didn't know how to go about that change. Someone told me about a program called Celebrate Recovery, and I started attending with a friend. It was a helpful and supportive program, but I kept hitting a wall and didn't realize why I kept hitting it. You see, I had already admitted that I had a problem that was out of control, step one, and I was a Christian, step two. But the third step involves fully turning control of your life over to the Lord. I kept avoiding that step for years without even realizing that's what was holding me back, which kept me from completing my healing. Around Thanksgiving in 2023, I faced 2 weeks of constant, horrible pain. I could barely eat or sleep, and I cried most of my waking hours. I was truly in agony. It was in the midst of this pain that I realized that I'm not going to make it through another second of suffering without asking God to sustain me. I reached my point of pure, heartfelt brokenness before the Creator of the universe because I literally had no other cards to play. All I had left was full surrender, full rock bottom surrender. I can tell you now that that was one of the best moments of my life. I just didn't realize it at the time. That moment was a turning point for me. I was finally on a trajectory of true healing. I've learned so much about myself and who I really am, and it's not the mask I've worn for most of my life. I'm finally allowing my full unmasked self to be seen by those around me. I'm also better at sharing my needs and boundaries with those closest to me now that I have a much clearer understanding of how I click. Knowledge can truly be a path to gaining some wisdom. Other lifestyle habits have changed for me too. I'm a dedicated housewife again. I have a weekly cleaning and cooking routine, which consists of a diet that's gluten-free with no seed oils. I have a weekly fitness routine that I follow rather faithfully. Figuring out that routine has been more cumbersome in the last year because I was diagnosed with both POTS and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, but I'm learning how to work with what I've been given. Along with working on healing my body, I'm also working on healing my mind and strengthening my faith. I have a weekday routine for personal reflection, which includes a Bible reading guide, thanks to the women's ministry here, thank you, and prayer time. I also take the time to self-reflect on what needs to change about me and what should stay the same. One of the most important and substantial things that I am still in the process of learning is how to truly love and value myself the way that God does. In particular, Psalm 139 has been a psalm that I often revisit. I literally start every prayer with the first part of verse 14. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. In my moments of fear, when I'm overwhelmed with wanting to loathe myself and replay all my mistakes and forgiven sins, I turn to Psalm 139 and remember that I am fully known and fully loved by the Lord. It is only because of His amazing love and grace that I am able to share with you this journey that I am still trekking. Praise God for His faithfulness, especially in our times of unfaithfulness. He is always good.
All right, morning. So, in honor of Wendell, we're going to start off here with a little quiz. So, we'll have a few questions over the course of my time. So, does anyone here know what the number 692,000 represents? Probably not. That's the number of hours the average American will live. 79 years on this earth. It seems like a long time until you contrast that against what awaits us in eternity. I don't know why I'm getting emotional. I sometimes sit and try and comprehend the concept of eternity, and I can't wrap my mind around it. I recently heard somebody say that 100 trillion years from now, we'll be communing with our Creator in the new heavens and the new earth. And that'll just be the beginning of our time there. I mean, think about that. So, as you can tell, that statement really struck me. I mean, it's crazy to even think about. So, why the question? Why am I talking about this? The reason I'm starting with this is just to say we have a limited time on this earth. We have a limited time to accomplish what we're here to do. In relation to our eternity, or in relation to eternity, our time here is quite literally a blip. As Carrie said last week, hebel, it's fleeting. So, like many of you, I'm sure, who have been up here for this, when Wendell asked me to share a personal reflection, I had a lot of ideas running through my head what I might talk about. I could focus on something I'm good at, perhaps Excel spreadsheets, and how most of problems in life can be solved with a good spreadsheet. Just ask Jackie. But instead, I decided to talk to some about something that I am perhaps one of the least qualified people here to discuss. What I want to talk about this morning is how do we prioritize our time? As a side note, many of the things I'm discussing this morning aligned really closely with what Carrie discussed at the end of her message last week. So much of it, so much of it overlapped. I even wondered if I should change my topic, but I was not brave enough, like Rob. So I continued on. But her bullet point and one of the things she said was, "Make the most of our brief lives, live well." So that's what I want to talk about. Many of you know that 8 years ago, I shifted careers and went from the traditional 8 to 5 office job and took a sales position where I'd be working from home. I distinctly remember thinking, wow, now that I don't have to leave at 6:45 every morning to get to work on time, I'm going to have more time in the morning to spend in prayer and study before I start my workday. This is going to be great. How do you guys think I worked out? Instead of dedicating that time to something that I should prioritize, that extra time just got absorbed into my normal workday. It just meant that instead of starting work at 7, I started at 6:30. Why did that happen? If you ask me what should be the most important part of my day, my honest answer would be time in the Word, time in prayer, time with my family. So why do I neglect that so often? The truth is, while I say the right things, my actions tell a different story. I have allowed other things in my life to take priority over the things that should matter. I can make excuses about how busy I am or whatever, but these are decisions I continuously make each day, and way too often I fail. So another question. Anybody know what 5 hours and 48 minutes represents? This one's embarrassing. It's my screen time from my daily screen time last week. I spend a lot of time in my truck. I listen to podcasts. So some of that is, taken up in that. But to be honest, a lot of that's Facebook, Twitter, scrolling, mindless stuff. And for what? So I recently found myself really engrossed in the mayoral race in LA. I don't know if any of you were following this, but if you don't know anything about it, they had a primary to decide who was going to be on the ballot in the fall. And there's a candidate named Spencer Pratt, a former reality TV star whose house burned down in the Palisade fires a few years ago. Red tape and regulations have prevented any of the homes from being rebuilt. So Pratt, rightfully so, is angry. He's fed up with what's going on in LA. He, along with thousands of others, lost their homes due to fires and poor preparedness by the city. Pratt was campaigning on bringing leadership back to the office, cleaning up the streets, preparing for wildfires, rehabilitating the homeless population, you know, cutting waste. All of these are great things for the people of LA. I was rooting for him. In the end, a wave of mail-in ballots bumped him to third place and out of the runoff in fall. I was mad. I was frustrated. While I care about my fellow Americans in LA, that race will have no direct impact on my life. Is it good to care? Yes. Should it occupy much of my time or thoughts? Probably not. In another example, the congressional race between Thomas Massie and Ed Gallarin. This one perhaps has a little bit bigger impact on our lives because Massie represents us in in Congress, and you know, so something we should maybe take an interest in. But did it justify the article after article after article I read on this for months on end? Nope. I like to justify my use of Facebook to myself because I follow some agronomists and other people in the ag community that produce really good content, and I really do learn and benefit from what they post. But at what cost? My time on Facebook is probably 90% wasted and 10% productive, and that 10% might even be generous. Most of my time is mindless scrolling. A way to pacify myself at the end of a long day and kind of veg out. But is it worth what I'm giving up? Meaningful time with my family. Chance to read a book. I don't want to stop following these people because I do truly benefit in my career and my job from this, but the question is, can I approach seeing their content in a way that is more strategic? Certainly. All right, last question of the day. 18 years and 9 months. Anybody? That is the time we've been in our home. Coincidentally, that's exactly the amount of time I've been in remodel mode. If you know me, you know I love DIY projects, and I can't deny that. Starting a project energizes me. Jackie might tell you finishing a project, not so much. I love the smell of fresh cut lumber. I love the smell of paint and all things construction. It's in me. And I love... I love our home. I love where we live. And I wouldn't want to change that. But I can't tell you the number of times I've felt regret that I've allowed it to take so much of my life. I hate to think about the number of Saturdays that Jackie took the kids off to the lake and I stayed home and worked. Our house has provided a great home for our family, a place to raise our kids, enjoy being in the country and schooling our kids, and we love it there. So I don't in any way regret having bought our house, which if you ever saw the before pictures, it was a dump. So I mean, it was a project for sure. But my question is, how often did my home projects take priority over things that mattered more? I'm going to call out Dave Stevens here for a second. I know Dave and many others in here on Saturday mornings go to Crown for coffee and spend time fellowshipping with others. And if I'm being honest, that would be hard for me to do. Saturdays are for work, right? Working on the house or working in the yard, working in the workshop. But what's the better decision? Investing in relationships or investing in material things? I know the right answer, but it's not the one that wins out in my life very often. I'm sorry, I didn't anticipate this being emotional. The side note, and I'm going to take a minute to commend my wife, which it's good that she's in Sunday school, so I'm not going to embarrass her. But she is so much better at this than I am at prioritizing. For years and years, faithfully, she read to the kids every night before they went to bed. She's made it a point as part of school to have Bible reading during the day, every day. She taught her kids how to cook, even when it was supremely inconvenient. How to do their laundry. Has a daily chore list for them. Does a 10-minute pickup in our house every day. Which that may be a little selfish on her part, just to get things done. But these are things that I never would have had the patience to do or taken the time to do. She has invested in our kids, even when it was when she was tired or it wasn't convenient. But she did it because it was a priority to her. I can definitively say her time and diligence in this area has molded the character of our children and has made them into the adults and the young adults that they are today. All right, back to me. I could go on with other things in life that take up my time. None of them are inherently bad. And when it comes to work, we know we're called to work hard and be productive. So, again, none of the things that distract me are bad. As Carrie reminded us last week, to enjoy the good gifts God has given us is to do his will and to glorify him. But when I wake each morning, I think about my day. Are the things that should be at the top of my priority list falling to number 5 or number 10 or to the second page? Too often, that's a yes for me. I've heard this very simple quote that I really like about the purpose of our lives as Christians. Many of you have probably heard this, to know God and to make him known. Very simple, but it really sums it up, doesn't it? Are we doing that to the best of our ability? Because I know I'm not. So as you think about your life, what are your time killers? What areas dominate your time and take away from accomplishing our work here on earth? Is it social media and working too much like me? Is it reading? That's for Olivia. Where's Olivia? My bookworm. I had to pick on her. College sports? Hunting? Movies? Riding your bike? That one's for you, Wendell. Video games? You know, in our connected world, the list of distractions is really endless. Ephesians 5:15-16 says, look carefully then on how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of our time because the days are evil. Making the best use of our time. That should be the goal for all of us. So going back to what I said earlier, I didn't choose this topic because I've got it mastered or I'm even good at it. Quite the opposite. I chose it because it's important, and it's an area in my own life that I need to improve upon. and I suspect others in this room feel the same. As painful as it can be, accountability is a good thing. Standing up in front of all of you and admitting this opens me up to accountability from all of you. I'm inviting you guys to ask me how I'm doing in this area because, I mean, truly, I do want to improve. And, you know, for years, I've tried to prioritize my time only to fall back into bad habits. When the youth group several years ago was doing the Read Your Bible in a Year plan, I was doing it along with my girls. It was doing great. And then life got in the way. And never finished it. So hopefully this will encourage you to evaluate how you spend your time. I'm by nature not a vulnerable person, so to stand up here and say all this stuff is, and quite frankly, embarrassing for me. Somebody who feels like they should be a leader at my age and or time in life, and you know, I don't feel like I am. So as I thought about this morning and how I can make meaningful change, I determined the first step is I need goals for myself, not just in my head, but written down, something to see, something to remind me. So goals for myself that I put together. And these are pretty basic, but I think having them there where I can see them, you know, is important. So number one, spending time regularly in the Word. Two, having a written prayer list, something that I can follow. It's not like, oh, I'll remember to pray for this guy today, but it may be 3 weeks before I remember again. But something there that's constant. Spending more quality time with my family and my friends. And less time on my phone and find it a balance with social media. So my plan is to have a written list of daily tasks that will help keep me on track. And I know I'm not going to be perfect, but you know, my goal is to strive each day to get better. And if you have things that have worked for you that you could encourage me with and tell me, hey, this worked well for me, I would sure be interested in hearing that. So that's all. Thanks.